Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to the Midweek Takeaway. Today we're joined by Colin Bird, Executive Chairman of Galileo Resources. Welcome back, Colin. It's great to have you back on.
And it's nice to be back on. I understand you guys are traveling. I'm also in Africa and down in South Africa.
All three of us are in Africa for the first time. Normally the only one.
We're in Zambia
which
now.
And I think it's very good that you see for yourself just, you know, what's being done and some of the challenges we face. And of course, more importantly, let's talk about challenges, but let's be realistic. But some of the opportunities that Zambia and South Africa and the rest of Southern Africa and I guess the rest of Africa for that matter, but the area you're in, there's tremendous opportunities and hopefully you're seeing that.
Sure. So just today, obviously, we saw the initial exploration results from wider area at Shinganda. Do you want to just talk about, obviously, these high gold grades that were encountered?
It's very interesting, isn't it? You know, but I mean, we're not here for interest. We're here for sort of commercial benefit and value add to our shareholders and stakeholders. So Shinganda is very, very interesting and has been from the very start. It had by a major mining company quite significant expenditure and detailed work in the form of geophysics. They established two trends, mineralized trends, and they had good results, a couple of decent results, some nice sniffs. But for whatever reason, as majors often do, here today, gone tomorrow, you know, that they, in actual fact, make a country decision as opposed to a project decision. And I'm not here to comment on other companies, but I suspect it was more an Africa decision than a Shinganda decision. Anyway, it's nice to have a raw database. It's nice to have somewhere to start from. And we started from the known. And you will see that, you know, you can recall, I'm sure, from previous podcasts, we had good intersections and we're pleased about the gold in association. Although it wasn't spectacular, it was there nicely, 0.2, 0.3, 0.4, along with some really good copper grades and some really good intersection lengths. You will also remember, I think, from podcasts that there were nearby pits, which quite frankly, Phil, Kevin, and they did little more than scratch the surface. But what they did show were these great big hematite blocks. And I for one, aren't certain as whether the old miners were there for the gold or were there for the copper, because you don't have to go back too far before gold and copper in the same bed were not good bedfellows. Nowadays, it doesn't matter. Processing has moved apace. And of course, off-takers are prepared to take concentrates with mixed gold and copper anyway. But back to the story, there we were. We were building up a strike length and absolutely intrigued by the possibilities of, you know, wherever we put in a trench or put in a pit, the propensity for success was extremely high. Got a bit confused because we started it in what we thought might be a conventional copper belt. And then a partner, a very senior partner of ours in one of the businesses, said, keep your options open because it could well be an hybrid in that part of the world. Stick to your IOCG. But at the same time, you know, it could be an hybrid. So keep your options open. So we got permission and we've got all the necessary exploration positions and permissions and went into the, you know, scouting, if you like, with it on a trend line and in an area, but just seeing what the world, what would come to us. And lo and behold, that, you know, we give them numbers like 7, 9, 11, 1, which is irrelevant, really. But what we have done is built up a strike length, which is open on both sides and not tested at depth. There's a real turnaround, Phil. Real turnaround, Kevin, that gold is predominant and copper is the minority. I know a few months ago, I said, you know, 0.3 grams of gold would be very useful to pay the working costs of a small pit. And 0.3 grams of gold, when, you know, you've got $60, is $20 rock, which pays a good chunk of the working costs and the copper comes for free. That was challenged a little bit on the bulletin boards, but that, you know, that really is the size of it. So, you know, if you want to discuss that further at some time, I'm very happy to do so with you. But now you're seeing this inverse ratio of where, you know, when you talk about 33 grams, you're actually talking about, you know, over an ounce of gold with copper. So an ounce of gold in this day and age is $1,900. You know, $1,900 for a ton of rock is quite something. Put the copper on top. And we're slightly over an ounce. This is a $2,000 rock. Now, imagine, you know, this is showing itself close to surface, looks to have trend, looks to be open-ended, whichever way you look at it. And are we excited? Of course we're excited. Can we join it up with what we've done before? We're not sure. These things come kind of in shear zones. They come sub-parallel. But there's one thing for sure, and you don't have to use too much poetic license. They're certainly on the same trend, you know, the same direction of trend. Predominant copper with some gold. This part of the property, predominant gold with some copper, the potential to build up strike and dip, to me, is extremely exciting. Don't want to talk about it, IOCG. I don't care what you call it. It's beginning to look like a valuable proposition. And we'll give it a geological name later on. But this result, I have to say, took us back a little bit. It's a splendid result. We'll do more of the same because the drill machine, as we all know, is expensive. And you employ the drill machine when you've got a pretty good idea what you're looking for. So I think we can do much of the same to extend the potential strike and then go out and test it. So the test will see, does it indeed go on strike further and how far does it go down? And the old system, you know, the more information we get back, the more we will understand it. But we have gone out for third-party assessment and third-party advice.
What you're talking about here, Colin, then is probably between 10 and 20% copper equivalent in certain places, obviously. It's not going to be the whole deal, but that's pretty impressive, no?
Oh, you're talking big numbers. I mean, you know, you don't see 33 grams with 0.28% copper. That's the sort of thing we're seeing, you know. You see it also nice 3.5 grams with 0.53 copper. So 0.5% of copper is $45. 3 grams of gold is a tenth of an ounce. That's 190 plus 30, 220. You're looking at about $230 rock. And when you look at the methods that we'll employ to get it, you know, open pit, near surface, that's pretty exciting. But Kevin, that's a little bit limiting because, you know, there's two fundamental questions. How big is this? And are we part of a system? So the feel-good feeling says it looks like we've got a mine, you know, a small mine. I coined the phrase and I coined it, you know, I use it again. The day of the small miner is definitely back. And everything I've read in the press over the last... Yeah, the day of the small miner is back. And everything I've read in the press over the last few days confirms it. I don't know where they're going to find tomorrow's copper. So we've got that good feeling about, yes, we'll find a substantial mini, you know, mini open pits. Well, it's not a mini open pit. Small mine, which has been going for a number of years. But is the big target there? We don't know. Is it an IOCG? I don't really care. But the world could well be a source. And, you know, these things have generally got a breccia which comes up and gives you these high-grade showings. And then down below, you have an intrusive where the fluids couldn't get through. And then they layer, Kevin, underneath the intrusive. And that's where you find the big pools, which obviously turned to metal in millions of years. And that's where you find your very, very nice IOCGs. Open-minded that. All the team's open-minded on what it is. The more strike we build up, the more excited we become. And box one is ticked. Are we going towards a small mine? Yes, we are. A sustainable little open pit? Yes, we are. Is the system bigger? I was going to say your guess is good as mine, but that's very unprofessional. Nobody's guessing here, Kevin. Your thoughts are as good as mine, and we all wish for it. The indications are certainly good.
Based on all those trucks driving down the main road in Zambia full of copper, which we were seeing as we were coming, then I think there's copper in them there hills at the end of the day. So it's quite incredible the amount of copper that's coming out of this country.
You know what I always say, Kevin, sorry to sort of, you know, always have my five bob there, but I think it's a bit important five bob, is people say to me, Zambia's been around forever. There's nothing there. How can you find new ore bodies? You know, Kitwe was started in 1929. The SOB shaft has been going, you know, and those main shafts have been going for nearly 100 years. And SOB... It's got another 50 years to go. That didn't give people much incentive to go off copper belt, off standard model, going looking for new discoveries, and chasing new concepts, geological disposition, you know. It really didn't. So, and Zambia, I mean, this people say, you know, that's Colin Bird again, talking his own story. But you know, if I made the comment, Zambia is probably unexplored in real terms. The opportunities are tremendous.
Very good. Yeah, I mean, while we're obviously in the country, in Zambia, we can also look at the other asset, Luansobe. I think the last time we talked, Colin, about it, there was the announcement of the 15 drill hole results from assay with, I think there was 28 drill holes in total. So there's, I guess, there's 13 outstanding. Where are we with that? I mean, is there any updates for shareholders and listeners on the
Lewin? Well, you know, I'm not allowed to, you know, I'm not allowed to forecast the imminence of news releases, but everything's been received and processed. We're as close as we're getting fairly close on grade recovery and cutoff graphs where we can actually find the optimum. Samples are away for testing, and that's getting quite advanced. We've got in our own minds that the route will probably be upgrade on site and transport to known infrastructure not far away to process. And we've got a good feel for anywhere between 5 and 6 million tons. Plan B is that we go X the open pit into an underground. It's a classical way of digging an open pit and X that open pit and then getting another 10 years of decline mining. But we're not sure about that. That's certainly there for us. But we can't tell, we can't go away, Kevin, from the fact that the deepest hole here is one is at 1,250 meters at a couple of percent. So we must never close our mind to that. But the further you go down, the further you go to the deeper stuff, the less drilling has been done. So we're taking a two-pronged approach to Lewin Sobey. One is we want to bring the open pit into production, ASAP, and we want to test what plan B is. Plan B, merging to C, where it's a whopping great mine and that there's not much sense in the decline, i.e. would sink a shaft. And that will not be a sequential action. That will be a concurrent action to start drilling the deeper material. Martin and myself were talking about that today.
It was interesting. Yesterday, we were in Johannesburg and we went to see Jubilee Metals and their processing plant there in just outside Johannesburg and Pretoria. So that was very interesting. And obviously, it doesn't take a genius to work out that Jubilee have set up copper processing not far from Lewin Sobey. So I don't need you to say anything, but basically, let's just join the dots.
Yeah, well, you join as many dots as you like and I'll stay out of jail. There's processing capability all over the country. And we would be very, very pleased to receive on a six-year, seven-year basis. Well, more now, you know, I mean, if you're talking 5 to 6 million, so let's say we're talking six, for example, 600,000 a year, that would be 10 years. That's nice stuff to get, Kevin. And as I say, I'd much sooner upgrade on site 4 or 5 times and transport to a facility, and then I would build something dedicated for this, because that saves you 17 to 22 million US dollars, and probably you require a couple of million dollars to upgrade it. And then, of course, you put the penalty you pay is the transport. But I'd sooner do that than spend 18 months building a plant. And then, you know, you talk about Jubilee there. They build a very smart plant in South Africa, and the complexity of a platinum plant versus the simplicity. Amazing. The copper plant is literally night and day.
Yeah. No, they're clever guys, because what they're pulling out that platinum, which is literally a minute fraction of 1% of what's coming out, is amazing. The technology that they're putting and the cleverness to get the chrome and then to go for the PGMs is really game changer, I think. And as they progress, they're going to do better and better, I think, because of the technology and because of the mind and the way that they've set that plant up. So no, I'm quite sure they're going to be able to get an excessive amount of copper out of the ore because of the capabilities that they have to get the metals out of the other ores. So yeah, that could be a positive. Assuming you use them, obviously.
You've probably made a very good point. You've probably made a very good point without realizing it, Kevin, when you talk about the complexity of the other ores and getting out of minute, you know, out of very small grades. So they've been both innovative and creative. What's needed on that copper belt, on the copper belt, is what's dumbfounded and confounded 10 or 15 years ago was the mixed ores. It's, you know, you get oxides, transition material and sulfides all in the same breath. And it wasn't so many years ago that that was a nightmare. And, you know, companies such as Jubilee, you know, have the capability, creativity, research capability to in actual fact make what was a nightmare into a relatively conformable process. Throw out the plant what you like. It will basically separate it, kick it into a circuit, and it'll end up in the final copper circuit and cobalt if cobalt's available. So yes, innovative, creative skills are still needed on the Copper Belt, but to make best use of all the ore types that exist there.
Very good. So Colin, I mean, what's next then? What can shareholders and listeners potentially look forward to from these Zambian assets?
Well, first of all, of course, there's nothing beats cash, is there, in this day and age, in any day and age, but particularly in this day and age. And so to get Lewin-Sabi into production is the team's mission. It really is. Heads down, contracts awarded, agreements consummated, metallurgy well understood, and financial models finalized into production. That really is the number one mission out of the Galileo portfolio. Next is, of course, lots of things batting for us. Is it Shinganda? Is it concession number 253 in Botswana, where we're looking very good in the Cobre region and its proximity to T3? Is it the 15 kilometers of gold strike in Bulawayo? Is it that ultramafic that we've found in the greenstones, which is not, you know, the probability of it being nickel bearing is extremely high? Is it lithium in Kamatavi? And what contribution is Kashita going to make on the zinc side? So really, you know, I mean, what a portfolio. We're going to concentrate on Lewin-Sabi, which gives us, you know, we've got cash coming, of course, on phase two from the sale of Glenover. Cash from Lewin-Sabi will enable the company to get all the best out of all the portfolio. So I'm particularly excited about the future, but single-minded about getting Lewin-Sabi into production as soon as possible.
When are we likely to get this payment then, Colin? I don't know how long is a piece of string, but Glenover, Aframat, when are we likely to receive this?
You said it, how long is a piece of string? And, you know, our partners, purchasers in this particular project have worked in the licensing system for many years. We take our turn in the queue, but I'm quite optimistic by end of first half latest, and our cash situation is okay in the time being, so we can advance all the projects as we need to. And if we beat that time, very good. If we don't beat that time, then obviously I'll be taking more intervention. But as I am now, intervention isn't necessary. Everything seems to be progressing to plan.
Yeah, and I mean, the reality of the situation at the minute, including that money, obviously it's not in the bank yet, but you're looking at all of those assets that you described are probably valued at 4 to 5 million sterling. So how do you feel about that?
Well, you know, I mean, I think you could divide that portfolio up into five and probably have two typical AIM companies. It is literally Pandora's box. It's full of goodies. And I understand, Kevin, and as I move through the years, I've been told to basically put all the pressure you can, put all the mental energy, put all the intellectual property you've got around you, all the resources that are with you, put all of it into things you can control. The markets at the moment have got such strong headwinds. I try not to cry into my beer about the share price. I don't know, this is an aside. I remember when I first went into the corporate business, you know, and stopped being a sort of an employee miner, you know, working on running mines, that I first went into the corporate side of life. I did quite a bit of work in Toronto. There wasn't a share much below $2. A year later, there wasn't a share much above 20 cents. Now, they all raised the money, they all added value to these projects, and all of a sudden, small miners were out of favor and everything got demolished. So really, you know, it's outside our control. The headwinds are tremendous, but the fundamentals are even more tremendous. If this green planet is going to be achieved, every day now we get articles from people who the world listens to, company chief executives, Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan, you name it, all of the banks are saying the same old story. This copper situation on the supply side is deteriorating by the day. If you look at Galileo, if you look at some of the companies we're involved in, all of them are call options for copper, call options for nickel. So if you really believe in tomorrow, that most of the companies are pretty good clubs to join. If you believe in Armageddon, then, you know, it's Barrick Gold. And I don't know where you're going to stick the gold because your bed will get blown up. So you're not going to stick it underneath there.
One last question from me.
Sorry.
Over in Zambia, okay? Because we've got this asset with Extract that you've recently purchased. Give us a little bit of a background on this. Kakuya? I think it is.
Kukui there. Yeah, well, Kukui is a very interesting project. Again, it fits the mold that we've been talking about, that geology is complex, and but not sort of, it didn't behave itself, I guess, for previous owners. You know, because if you look at where we are now in Shiganda, people put one hole down, didn't repeat it with the second hole, and off they went. And juniors, you know, see an high-grade deposit on surface, stick it all down 70 meters, don't get what they want, and move on. So everything you look at, and Kukui is no exception, has got more potential than is apparent if you just take a superficial look. I don't want to be boastful, but we've got a team in Galileo and we've got a team in Extract, all of the companies, but don't take superficial looks. We take our time to determine where we're going to work. We pick our projects hopefully well. We don't jump in at the deep end. We do our technical work. And you will have seen that Kukui is really has gone from being a small potential 200,000 or 300,000 ton pit to well over 2 kilometers of strike and growing with some very high grade material. So I, for one, are excited about the prospects. We're not taking the cheap way, just digging in what's immediately available. We're doing pushbacks. We're actually revealing as much ore as we can for immediate mining. We're having this stuff tested in various process plants, and we're also testing for the strike. And quite frankly, we've not closed it off yet. So basically, when you look at 300 tons for a 2-year dig, now being 2.4 kilometers of strike, the grade's quite good, the ore body width quite good, the dip favorable. I'm very pleased with the Kukui acquisition. And that's my summary on that one.
So can you see that this will add, let's say, in the next 12 months plus, you can see this will add revenue to the Extract shareholders and the pot?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, that a thumbs up would say we've got 5 years, but I don't want to suck thumbs. It's more about doing the work, but it's certainly not a 300,000 ton small mine. It's been going on for a number of years, and it has the potential to add significant cash flow to the Extract portfolio, alongside Manika Gold, and the alluvials will, you know, start phasing down, I guess, in 6 months' time. So we're coming into full swing with Manika Gold, and then we'll have other sources of income from Zambia, which Kukui is number one.
That's good news.
Very good. Well, I think on that note, we've talked enough. Say, Colin Bird, Executive Chairman of Galileo Resources, thanks very much for your time.
No, thanks for yours. I realise that you guys have got a lot to do and you're in the middle of a very busy day. And I wish you well with the rest of the trip, but look forward to seeing you in the next few days. Thank you very much for taking time for this podcast. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. And Martin's going to take us to a good Indian.
Good curry house tonight, yeah. No pressure there, Martin.
Well, that doesn't sound much like a Sunday roast to me, if you don't mind me saying.
It's a Zambian Sunday roast, apparently.
It's a Zambian Sunday roast, Indian.
Probably involves a goat or something.
Yeah, those Zambian curries will be very nice too, let me tell you. And they swill down with a nice cold castle. So enjoy yourselves. You've deserved it. You've put in a lot of miles.
Very good.
You're putting in a lot of miles.
See you soon, Colin.
Thank you.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.